In the criminal justice system, the people are represented by two separate yet equally important groups, the police who investigate crime and the district attorneys who prosecute the offenders. These are their stories.
It's the dream matchup. The Sacramento Kings, their best record in the NBA, against the two-time defending champion, LA Lakers. Western Conference Finals, best of seven.
Hello, and welcome to episode 3 of Basketball Court. I'm your host and the judge here in Basketball Court, Peter Andrews. Once again, we will bring you two new NBA alternate timelines for you to enjoy tonight, and they'll be presented by our competing counsel. First up, two-time defending champion, Miles Johnson.
What's up, y'all? Going for the three-peat tonight.
And also our two-time defending loser, Sam Tidings.
Like the Kings in 2002, I'll try to stop you from getting a three-peat, Miles.
Very apropos segue into our work this evening. As you know, the setup of Basketball Court is we talk about the pivotal moments in every sport, the moments that change the landscape of what is to come. Think of what had happened if Ray Allen, for example, had missed that corner three in Game 6 of the Finals. In basketball, every bounce counts. A difference in inches can determine sports immortality. And what we talk about here in Basketball Court is those what-ifs. Each week, we'll be debating and litigating a famous moment where the NBA was at a crossroads. We'll break down the ramifications of the original results, and our counselors will present an alternate NBA timeline of what would have happened if things had gone differently. And at the end of the episode, I will decide who had the most compelling argument via my authority here as the only one in this podcast currently in law school. Before we get started, this is your reminder that there's lots of ways to follow the show. You should subscribe to us on iTunes. You can leave us a review, which is helpful so that, people will also, other people will listen to us. We're also on Facebook. You can search Basketball Court Podcast. Our Twitter handle is @BballCourtPod. You get more info about each episode and tons of extra content. On the Twitter right now, I did a poll. I did a poll tonight as to who was going to win the argument tonight. And I will bring you the results of that poll right now. Three people voted, and all three people voted for Miles. So people know how this works by now. Finally, you can feel free to email us at basketballcourtpodcast@gmail.com. That's basketballcourtpodcast@gmail.com. Any other housekeeping stuff, fellas, or shall we get into it?
I'm ready.
Let's go for it.
All right.
I'm excited.
All right.
It's a 2-point Sacramento lead. We're down to 7 seconds. Bryant putting the move on Christie. Rebound O'Neal.
The 2002 Western Conference Finals was one of the most memorable playoff series in NBA history. The two-time defending champion Lakers took on the upstart Kings, who had the best record in the NBA that season but had been knocked out of the playoffs by the Lakers in the previous two. The final four games of the series were not decided until the final minute, including Robert Horry's Game 4 buzzer beater, Mike Bibby's game winner in Game 5, some controversial officiating in Game 6 handing the Lakers a win, and the first conference final to see Game 7 go into overtime, where the Lakers eventually prevailed. The win pushed the Lakers to a three-peat and left NBA fans to wonder what could have been with the Kings, as Chris Webber's various injuries in the next 2 years kept that team from getting close to a title again. So we're going to ask our two co-counselors to imagine a scenario where the Knicks get past the Lakers in 2002.
Kings.
Where the Kings get past the Lakers in 2002.
Knicks aren't getting anywhere even in these time holds.
That's true. Just pretend that they're not even a factor in the Basketball Court universe.
I really did try to shoehorn them in there, and it's even in the dark recesses of my imagination, there's no saving the Knicks.
I tried hard, speaking of things we weren't able to get into this episode, I tried to shoehorn some way that the Sixers benefited from the Kings winning to really juice everything up with the Honorable Judge Andrews here.
Yeah, to pander.
I was trying. I'm desperate, man.
Well, we'll see.
Couldn't find anything to help the Sixers out. I'm sorry, buddy.
So the questions before our counselors are, who would prevail in Knicks-Nets finals, and what would a Lakers...
Still the Kings.
Oh, my God. Well, the nice thing about being the judge is that you're infallible. So I will just direct the clerk of the court to strike any mention of the word Knicks and replace it with Kings. who would prevail in a Kings-Nets finals, and what would a Lakers loss mean to the landscape of the league? We will do now the coin toss. Same coin as last week. We've got Queen Elizabeth's head on one side and a dragon thing on the other side. Miles, you're the defending champion. Please call the coin toss.
I'll go with Elizabeth, which I'm assuming is heads.
Yes, but it is, in fact, tails. So, Sam, you either get to start first or defer.
I am going to allow opposing counsel to go first this week. I think that's been my undoing in the first two episodes.
That's true. You have gone first twice, and now you take a back seat. So, Mr. Johnson, as per usual, we'll put 15 minutes or so on the clock. I almost said 15 seconds, which would have really required you to condense your argument.
I can do it in 15 seconds if you need me to.
Well, let's do the long version first, and then if I can't follow it, we'll get it at the end. All right. The Kings beat the Lakers. What happens, Mr. Johnson?
Right. So, to be clear, the Kings do beat the Lakers, and they beat them in 5 games, partly, and maybe not even partly, but mostly, because that game 4 Robert Horry 3 off of that miraculous tip back, that doesn't go down. So the Kings win by 2 in that game 4, and they end up finishing the Lakers off back in Sacramento the next game. I have them also winning the NBA title, beating the Nets in 6 games. So what does this mean? It means a couple of things. One, for one, Chris Webber gets his own shoe deal. That's pretty important, I think, for lots of people, but especially for a guy who, were this to not happen, and so were real life, the status quo to continue to exist, Chris Webber would be first and foremost the guy who called timeout in that now infamous Michigan game and cost the Fab Five an NCAA title. Now, Chris Webber is not everyone's favorite NBA failure, but is a NBA champion. He gets his own shoe deal. Peja Stojakovic is sort of cemented as like one of the great sort of shooters on a all-time great Kings team. It's great in Sacramento.
I want to ask if you have...
The other thing this does...
Sorry. Yeah, sure. I want to ask if you have a suggestion as to what Chris Webber's shoe would have been called.
Oh, man, that's a good question. I think it still would have been one of, like, the Air Maxes. But, I don't know. I think they would have just called it some generic, like the C-Web 1s, the C-Web 2s or something. You know, not too creative. It's not like he was, like, Allen Iverson or something with, like a cool nickname for the shoe, you know.
Yeah, I buy that. I buy that.
Clear shoes, like the Patrick Ewing joints, you know. So the Kings winning the title that year. I have them going on the next year and actually losing to the Mavs, just like it did in real life, in the Western Conference semifinals. And really, the biggest thing about this is what happens to the Lakers afterwards. Because in that next season, they're trying to rebound after this upset loss to the Kings the year before. Because, you know, this was the Lakers team coming off of, a championship. Like, they shouldn't have gone down the way that it did. But this is another year where Shaq shows up unprepared for 20 pounds overweight coming out of the offseason. And any type of animosity that exists between him and Kobe before is only exacerbated. Again, Horry doesn't make that shot in game 4, so the whole like big shot Bob thing never really takes off, never really sort of develops this reputation as this clutch shooter, and that ends up really hurting the Lakers the following year, not just because of that, but also because that bench was kind of weak that next year anyway. And then I actually have the Lakers that next year getting upset in the first round of the playoffs by Minnesota. And if you'll remember, Minnesota was led by one of the like greatest single seasons in NBA history that Kevin Garnett had. But instead of all of that work being for naught, it ends up actually paying some dividends that I'll get into later for Minnesota. Other thing
that just something while we're talking about the Lakers and their and their bench, specifically referring to one Robert Horry. I would like to disagree with the notion that all of a sudden he loses his clutch gene because he misses the shot in game four. Because some of our younger listeners might not remember this, but Horry was also famous for hitting shots in the 95 playoffs with the Rockets. He hit the game-winning shot in game three of the finals in 2001 against the Sixers. So I fucked that up, Your Honor. Even earlier in that playoffs, he came where I think it was against Portland, Dallas, or someone like that. Anyway, I think that all this evidence clearly establishes that Robert Horry, the big shot Bob name especially, was not generated just off of one shot. And to suggest that his clutch gene would vanish after an offseason like that is just preposterous.
Well, look at Sam coming out hitting this week.
Yeah, I mean, a couple things. One, obviously, Sam is not going to let things slide this week. I don't think it's... I don't think Miles' claim is preposterous, but I do think that your point is valid that that iconic shot is not the only shot that establishes Big Shot Bob. However... what I'll say is, so Miles loses, you know, this is like Whose Line Is It Anyway, the points really don't matter, I just make up my mind at the end, but Miles loses a point for that, but I do think that it doesn't unseat his main point, which is that the Kevin Garnett beats the Lakers.
And I mean, just to clarify, I'm not sure that I totally agree with Sam, but I wasn't trying to suggest that him missing that shot would have been some sort of kryptonite that zapped his clutch gene powers, as much as, you know, this was, if not the biggest shot of his career, certainly a top three big shot in Horry's career that ended up carrying over to the following season and a couple seasons after that, in which he would have played on different squads, not for the Lakers. So, I mean, without getting to the points, don't really matter. So I'll concede the loss here, but I don't wanted to clarify. I'm not suggesting that there's any type of like Clark Kent kryptonite stuff going on.
Fair enough. Continue.
So what this also means is that Lakers go from, you know, really being able to establish this dynasty to having two pretty high salary guys on a team that now not only is like internally dysfunctional, but it's also not winning basketball games anymore. And so the front office is pissed off. Mitch Kupchak is in somewhat of a hot seat, and he doesn't fire Phil Jackson the next season, so not the 2003, but he fires him in the 2004-2005 season. The Kings go on to underperform in the playoffs next year, but because they've won this title in 2002, both fans in Sacramento and ownership are a lot more secure about the Kings and about their placement and importance to the city. There's really no chatter of like moving the team anywhere. All the sort of like rumors about Seattle moving and the potential destinations. I think Seattle was one of them. Like none of that happens. Kevin Johnson, in the future is going to end up being the mayor, never has to like have all these like last ditch efforts to save the team, and that means the people of Sacramento don't get stuck with this like ridiculous deal to pay for this extraordinary and lavish stadium. Like none of that happened because they've won this title. Lakers end up holding on to Shaq and Kobe, but not as long as they did in real life. So in real life, he was traded during the 2004-05 season to Miami. I have them moving Shaq a year earlier, and I had them trading him to Indiana, who that season, in real life, they won 61 games. I have in my timeline them winning 64 games. I traded to Indiana for Jermaine O'Neal, and who would in the future be known as Metal World Peace, and Indiana's 2005 first round pick. But of course, because this trade happens, this also means the Malice in the Palace never happens. because Ron Artest and Jermaine O'Neal and Steven Jackson, like, that motley crew of fine individuals is not on the same team together. Ron Artest never has a beer thrown in his face, and he never goes up and terrorizes the great, wonderful, law-abiding citizens of Detroit. And so that's kind of the sort of the takeaways of the next couple of years.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah, sure.
Which is, do you think that redirecting the course of Ron Artest's history in such a way means that he would still eventually change his name to Meta World Peace?
Oh, absolutely. Because I think there are some things about basketball court that I like try to really have remain constants. Like, injuries are constant. Some like transcendent teams, like that Mavs team that beat the Heat in the finals, that was, you know, destiny. That is going to remain constant. And Ron Artest is a crazy person, so that has to also remain constant. And I think the only real change would have been like whether he went with the, what was it, Panda Friend? What was his name before World Peace? He was Big Panda, Panda Friend or something. That Panda Friend, like, that might have happened before World Peace, and everybody would have also been really confused because he wouldn't have spent that stint overseas in China to even have that name make sense. But that might have happened. But he's definitely changing his name at least two or three times.
Fair enough.
So those are the big sort of takeaways the next few seasons. At the Kings, you know, again, the team stays in Sacramento and their fans are cool, but they sort of fade into obscurity, which doesn't, you know, in the NBA, that means not that you are terrible necessarily, but you're not so bad that you get a lot of draft picks and are able to do well in the draft. You're not so good that you're contending, kind of just fade. Guys like Chris Webber, Vlade Divac, Doug Christie enter the sort of twilight of their careers. But that also means that there aren't any huge shakeups in the front office because, again, everyone is kind of placated off of this 2002 title. But again, really want to emphasize that the biggest thing here, the most important salient takeaway, is that Kevin Garnett, if Robert Horry misses that shot in 2004, or sorry, in game four of the 2002 series between the Lakers and the Kings, it has incredible implications for Kevin Garnett, Boston, and sort of the I guess you could say the style of team building that would take place in the NBA almost a decade later. And what I mean by that is Garnett is going to spend his entire career in Minnesota. He has this MVP season in 2003 and goes on an unbelievable tear in the playoffs that same year. They win the title. Another constant, speaking of Ron Artest and injuries and, you know, transcendent teams, another constant is that the Wolves front office is horrifically, nauseatingly incompetent. But the only difference between the Wolves team in this sort of altered timeline and the Wolves team in real life is that I have Minnesota as being a little bit better than they would have been. And maybe not even better on paper, but because this Lakers team was broken up, there's not as much opposition. And so they do a little bit better for a little while longer. And so there's just physically not as many opportunities, aren't as many opportunities for David Kahn to totally ruin things. So, for example, they've done well enough in my timeline not to have all of those picks in 2009 to totally screw up. And part of the reason that they have done that is because, again, Kevin Garnett doesn't leave for Boston. And so he's still, you know, having a pretty decent, you know, because he's still pretty, you know, great player on both sides of the ball in Boston. That never happens. That also means that Paul Pierce and Ray Allen are screwed. Pierce is going to end up spending his entire career on just a string of mediocre Boston teams. He never gets a ring. Ray Allen is going to bounce around from Milwaukee, where he was, of course, you know, around the same time when this whole things starts, to Seattle. He has a brief stint when Seattle changes over to Oklahoma. And then he's going to actually end up on the Cavs. Wade and the Heat never get to the finals because the Shaq trade never happens. And one of the sort of last like little nuggets I have, even though, again, this whole thing is really about how Kevin Garnett becomes, you know, redeemed as being able to take a team by himself to the finals and jerseys hung in the rafters in Minnesota. But last little thing I have here is that the Cavs end up winning that title in 2008. We get that storied, famed matchup between LeBron and Kobe that we never got because I still have the Pau Gasol trade going through. I think they still would have had the assets to make that trade. But the Cavs win that title in 08, partly because they've done things like acquire guys like Ray Allen and some other 3-and-D guys to help LeBron, because you'll remember that team is a little better than 2007, but still like not great. But there's that big three in Boston doesn't exist, and that big three is not there to stop LeBron, and he gets his ring, but you also never have this big three renaissance because it's not a thing that ever happened. Like, the Boston really broke a lot of ground by getting Garnett and Pierce and Allen together in the same squad, and you would have seen similar sort of moves toward that with teams like that Lakers team in 2010, of course the Miami Heat big three. Like, that sort of fad never happens, and it's all Robert Horry's fault.
So before we move on to Sam's portion of the argument, I want to give Sam a chance because I think that Miles has scored a lot of points with this last digression here about Kevin Garnett and the effect on team building and the effect on the Cavs. So I want to explicitly ask Sam if he wants to challenge any part of what Miles has just said.
Oh, no.
I do, because here's something that I was going to object to, and thank you, Judge, for allowing me to do so.
Yeah, so the proper term is Your Honor. Let's just be clear about Judge. This.
Sir Judge,
Your
His
Honor.
Royal Majesty, Judge Andrews. So the thing I want to object to here is that the LeBron free agency in 2010, it wasn't just them teaming up in Miami out of the blue, that you had at least three or four teams who were clearing cap space for 2-3 years in advance, trying to give themselves the capability to offer two superstars a max contract. And the Heat sort of skirted that by fitting in three guys a little under the max, but this idea that the 2010 free agency has completely changed because Kevin Garnett won a title 7 years earlier is just absurd, quite frankly. And I don't know if it means maybe the Cavs manage their cap better and they can afford, you know, to have Wade or somebody come to Cleveland, or maybe Wade and LeBron team up somewhere else, or there is some other super team, but there's going to be teams with two max guys or even three max guys on their team, regardless of, you know, the mythos of one guy taking his team to a championship.
Am I allowed to respond to that really briefly?
Of course.
So this isn't about how many guys are teaming up together. This is about the notion of doing it at all. I mean, we're talking about something that even today still is frowned upon. You know, it things like people attempting to discredit LeBron's championships in Miami by saying, well, he, you know, had to run and, you know, seek shelter from guys like Dwayne Wade. He couldn't get it done on his own. This is something that was a phenomenon that, yes, perhaps started before the ink was dry on the Garnett and Ray Allen signings in Boston, but teaming not just like two or three max guys, but two or three like superstars, like people who would have been known for carrying teams by themselves onto one squad, was something that just hadn't happened before and took a lot of getting adjusted to. So I think if that never happens, and you have situations in which again, because I mean, I have this, you know, before in my timelines with Reggie Miller and Shaq would have been playing on that Indiana team in the same time. But that's not the same thing as a Ray Allen, Kevin Garnett, Paul Pierce matchup at the time when it happened, or LeBron James, Dwayne Wade, Chris Bosh matchup in Miami when it happened. Like, this idea that, you know, perennial superstars, people that are going to be Hall of Fame inductees, coming together and creating these teams.
Miles, correct me if I'm wrong, but the Celtics didn't put that tandem together in free agency. They made two separate trades.
No, they were trades, right, of course.
But so, don't you think that changes the argument of, like, people being willing to team up versus, like, a savvy GM putting a team together?
I guess what I'm saying is the thought of this is something that we need to do in order to win a title doesn't come about because there's no evidence that it's needed before. You know,
you had Jordan and Pippen. This is stuff that would have happened your deviation.
So, Miles, you're saying the third guy is the unique thing here?
I am saying that, again, in my timeline, Kobe and Shaq fall apart. You have a situation in which there is not enough space. Right, no, of course. But there's not enough space for two superstar egos. Phil Jackson, a coach who by that time would have had, 8 titles, gets run out of town because you have, again, a spoiled kid in Kobe and an older all-star in Shaq who doesn't want to mentor him, and you have this clash of egos. And then on the heels of that, again, I think this is what I guess I'm trying to articulate as being just as important. On the heels of that sort of crumbling in L.A., you have Kevin Garnett taking this band of misfit toys all the way to the finals and winning. And then only, 5 years later, or 4 years later, you have LeBron getting finals by himself with the miserable 2017 and losing. And the year afterward, I have them winning the whole thing. So again, I guess my point is not so much that it wouldn't be possible for these things to have happened because, again, yes, the Boston Big Three sort of meetup or whatever wasn't a free agency thing that happened through trades. But my guess or inclination, whatever you want to call it, is that this urge to build these super teams doesn't take place. And not to say that it doesn't even necessarily take place ever, but it doesn't take place sort of on the same timeline as it would have in real life, because you had these super teams or kind of super teams, not really, before that fell apart and broke off. And you had this, you know, I don't know if you want to call it an era of, like, rugged individualism in the NBA or whatever. but you know what I mean? Like, you had these sort of transcendent one-man show performances from guys like Garnett and LeBron. And I don't think GMs were even thinking about, like, let's start building and, like, stockpiling all of these, like, really haymaker, heavy-hitting assets.
All right, I think that's enough for this particular digression.
Sure.
Let's send it over to Mr. Tidings, who has a similar 15 minutes worth of brief to present here. Mr. Tidings, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Good. We're getting better at this.
I'm learning. I'm like a smart child. So my deviation point is also Robert Horry missing his shot. I do want to say for the record, for the listeners out there, that my fellow panelists know this, but I did have that first. Just Miles decided to go first. I was too busy, you know, cutting up the audio and all that lovely stuff. But yes,
Sam is really upset about losing the first two episodes of this podcast.
Let's be clear. Your being ahead of the game has less to do with your innovativeness and more your hell-bent desire to finally win one. So
I just want to put together a good product that everyone can enjoy.
You also,
that's
totally
all I really care about.
The first one by refusing to do anything but make Kevin Durant be the best player in the history of the game in like 5 seasons.
I'm not here to talk about the past, and you're eating up my time, and it's really disrespectful.
The clock is paused for crosstalk.
Oh, good. Anyway, so Ori misses, and the Kings win the series in five. They beat the Nets in five games in the NBA Finals. It's a very low-rated Finals, but the Kings win. They have the ring. What does this mean for the Kings? The team has more fan support in the coming years. Arco Arena was already a really tough place to play beforehand, and now you have people coming from all over Northern California to come see the NBA champions. Another important thing is that the Maloofs hold on to ownership of the team, which might not mean a ton in the immediate future, but it does mean there's less incentive for them to give up ownership of the team to Vivek Ranadive and his odd ideas in the distant future.
So I want to intervene here with a couple thoughts.
Go ahead.
One of which is, as someone who currently lives in Northern California, I can confirm that nothing would make me drive to Sacramento for any reason. So that seems a bit speculative to me. Secondly, what do you think about, so they're going to stay in the Arco Arena. Of course, now that arena has a much better naming rights, do you think that in this alternate timeline we still get the Sleep Train Arena?
I don't know if we do get the Sleep Train Arena, because I think if you have a team that's won an NBA championship, and if they are, you know, more competitive in the future than they were in real life. I mean, obviously, part of the reason the Kings' run got derailed is because Chris Webber got hurt the next two seasons in the playoffs and really ended things. I think you could probably charge more for naming rights if you have, you know, 2002 NBA champion banner up in the arena than if you haven't, you know, if you just haven't made the playoffs in 10 years and you have no ring. And that's sort of how you end up being the Sleep Train Arena. I think maybe they could be like the Smoothie King Center and the Pelicans end up as the Sleep Train Arena, but that's not exactly the focal point of my timeline, unfortunately.
That is disappointing. I wish you had spent more time on that. Also, I am personally sad about Vivek not coming to the league, because we will lose out on the greatness of Vlade Divac, general manager down the road. But anyway, please continue.
Well, he certainly has the money to be an owner, but I just think the Kings are more incentivized, the Maloofs, I should say, are more incentivized to hold on to the Kings and not sell the team and sort of lead to this relocation controversy if they have a ring to hang their hat on in the immediate future. Part of the reason the Sonics were able to get away with moving the team is they hadn't won in 30 years. And this is sort of something that Miles talked about too, but losing in 2002, Kobe and Shaq hate each other even more. And the next season, they lose again, also partially because Robert Horry misses a shot. And so once they lose in the playoffs the next year, Kobe says, I'm a free agent after 2004. If Shaq's still on the team at that time, I'm out of here. And the Lakers sort of panic, and so they decide to trade Shaq that offseason, a year early, like Miles said. But instead of sending him to the Indiana Pacers, they send him to the Detroit Pistons. And this is allegedly the deal that was going to be in place. The Pistons were going to send Ben Wallace and other salaries to make the money match and the rights to the number two pick in the draft. So the Pistons were going to hold on to Billups and Hamilton, and it sounds like Tayshaun Prince, but they were going to give up Ben Wallace and the number two pick and bring in Shaq, who would have just been coming off two finals MVPs and MVP, and then two very strong seasons where the Lakers just didn't end up winning in the end. And then the Lakers, with that number two pick, they decided to draft Carmelo Anthony at the number two spot. So the Lakers have a lineup of Derek Fisher, Kobe, Carmelo Anthony, Ben Wallace at the center, and some power forward.
Who gets Darko?
I think in this scenario, Darko might end up falling to Denver at three. He might end up with the Raptors at four, because the Raptors obviously wanted a big man. And if Darko's still on the board, maybe they pass up Bosch for Darko. But
yeah, that would have been
both
hilarious.
Of those teams, that would have been quite funny. But, you know, as neither of those teams did anything particularly important in the next decade of the NBA anyway, except for trade Carmelo, which in this situation Denver can't. The Darko thing is just more of a European guys not doing well in the NBA, adding to that, and not a wow, the Pistons could have had Carmelo Anthony, you know, sort of situation. And so the Pistons there is no Rasheed Wallace trade now because they don't really have the cap space for him or the need. And they have a pretty dominant team in this scenario with Billups, Hamilton, Tayshaun Prince coming into his own, and then Shaq, who sort of ties it all together. So it's a team that's not as good defensively, but still really tenacious, just because Ben, not that Shaq was an awful defender, but Ben Wallace was just an absolute monster in terms of defending the rim and grabbing rebounds. And so the Pistons have a team that's good enough to win the next three titles. Would they? I don't know. I've gotten in trouble on this podcast for predicting teams would win three titles in a row before. But they're definitely good enough to win the next three titles. And the Lakers have a team also that's good enough to compete for a championship, because Kobe's in his prime. Carmelo, if you remember, as rookie, second year, third year guy, really hit the ground running and was doing a pretty good job of scoring. And considering him and Kobe are pretty much both, you know, give me the ball and get out of the way guys, if they were able to share that load, there wasn't really anyone in the front court that was worth, you know, dumping the ball down to 20 times and getting out of the way like they had with Shaq. And so this team with a balanced offense, Kobe's a great perimeter defender, and now Ben Wallace is protecting the rim. So that's a team that is good enough, in my opinion, to compete with the Spurs and the Timberwolves and the Mavericks and the Kings and all the great Western Conference teams in the early 2000s. So there is a possibility as early as 2004, maybe 2005, that we do get a Kobe versus Shaq finals with the Pistons against the Lakers, which would have been a ratings bonanza that certainly would have made up for whatever shortfalls they got from putting the Nets up against the Kings for five or six games in prime time. And so some lasting effects from that, not only just stability in Sacramento, but their success combined with the fact that Detroit's extremely successful, San Antonio's successful, Dallas has put together a great team, a team that's good enough to win a title in 2006, whether or not they play this dominant Shaq-led Pistons team or the Shaq and Wade Heat team from real life, a team that was good enough to win a title, certainly. A team that was good enough to win in 2007 that lost to the Warriors, but that's a separate issue. There's proof that smaller market teams can have consistent success in the NBA, and that you can compete for a championship every year if you're not New York or the Lakers or the Bulls or some big market team. And I do think that affects the perception of the league, because a lot of the way that the common fan or the non-NBA fan sees the league is that, oh, the Lakers just win every year, or it's always the Lakers or the Heat or whoever has LeBron, and there's no parity in the league. But this sort of shows that you can win in any city if you have good enough management. And it's also with the fact that Sacramento has a ring and that they're competitive going forward in the decade, even if Seattle moves out to Oklahoma City, which I don't know if there's anything in my timeline to insinuate that they wouldn't, but perhaps there is more of a push to put another team in the Pacific Northwest to sort of compete with Portland and Sacramento and Northern California, and maybe a team like the Bucks ends up moving since there's not really relocation drama for the Sacramento Kings anymore. And so in some other big takeaways I have in here is that the Kings' style of basketball with point forwards like Weber and Divac running the offense is successful, and teams try to attempt to copy that to bring bigs out of the paint, have them pass the ball, run the offense, and you try to get the opposing big out of the paint as well, so you have someone like Shaq or Ben Wallace far away from the rim, so you have Shaq chasing guys around the perimeter, or Ben Wallace forced to leave the rim. And so it's a big boost for Mike D'Antoni and his brand of offense. Other guys who benefit from this, Chris Webber, because he has a ring. Like Miles said, he's no longer the guy who's famous for always losing in the end. Now he's got a championship, probably a finals MVP. I guess his own line of sneakers, if we're going to go that route as well. Shaq, because he probably wins rings, multiple rings, outside of LA instead of just the one in Miami in real life. He's probably on a team that's good enough to win two championships, maybe three in Detroit, a team that's certainly competing for a championship every year. And he's able to prove more that he doesn't need Kobe than Kobe's able to prove that he can win without Shaq. And teams that are, I guess, losers in this scenario, with Melo on the Lakers, he's in a big market. He doesn't need to force his way out of Denver. He doesn't need to force his way to the Knicks. And so when LeBron decides not to go to the Knicks in 2010, they're kind of left holding the bag, and they don't get that, even that one run with Melo and Stoudemire. They're sort of just still screwed, still the Knicks, still striking out in free agency. Also, Kobe is a big loser in this. And I know we weren't going to use this on the podcast anymore, but just huge dick potential here for Kobe. Just forcing Shaq out and not winning rings, and then him getting along with Carmelo Anthony, two guys who sort of have the exact same brand of offense.
I thought I was clear about what policies would be enforced in basketball court going forward about the phrase dick potential.
Sam, like, had the win locked up and then may have just thrown it away.
You know what? I felt like it was more important to use that phrase, especially referencing Kobe, than it was to hold on to. I needed to give you the points back after you got the Robert Horry thing so egregiously wrong. I wanted to even things up a little bit.
See, I think just so we're clear, Sam, you get points because your willingness to do something not only to win suggests, like, to me, that's a good thing. That suggests that you're maturing from your defeats. So
it's okay.
This was worked out for you in the end somehow.
Outwardly defying the judge Curry's favor in this court.
I'm a very, very capricious man. Sam, you have anything else?
There's one big takeaway that I want to take away more than anything, more than Miles not having the malice of the palace, which I think would be a huge moment in NBA history if that was just wiped from the books. Tim Donaghy, who is a name you guys might remember, a man who was a disgraced former referee. He admitted in the late 2000s, the aughts, whatever we're calling that decade, that him and some other NBA refs allegedly conspired to fix certain NBA games. One of those games is Game 6 of the 2002 Western Conference Finals, which, if you remember, I think Shaq shot 20 free throws just in the fourth quarter alone. Mike Bibby got called for a foul on defense when Kobe elbowed him in the face. It certainly seemed to an impartial fan that the league really wanted the Lakers in the finals. They really did not want them to lose to the Kings. They didn't want to put up with a Kings versus Nets series. But of course, in my alternate timeline, there is no Game 6 of the 2002 Western Conference Finals. There is no Game 7. There's no real rigging of everything by the league. So let's assume that the Kings-Nets series isn't very highly rated. Does this mean that they're is more of an effort from whoever is influencing these referees, whether it's David Stern or someone else, to push for that Kobe-Shaq finals? Does maybe the Spurs get screwed out of a finals appearance because the league really wants to see a Pistons versus Lakers? Or maybe even is there a lot of influence to try to get the Nets to win that series so they can try to build up some sort of strong team in the New York City region? Or, you know, maybe we're talking about a rigged 2005 Western Conference Finals in our alternate timeline because in the alternate basketball court, there's some huge controversy surrounding the Spurs and the Lakers in 2005 or 2006 or something. But either way, the name Tim Donaghy is probably not as big of a deal as it is in real life because I don't know about opposing counsel, but when I was doing research for this episode, I was doing an extensive amount of research. The first thing that comes up when you search
doing the best
Lakers,
your research is so classy.
My research is humongous. It's the classiest. It unifies people. But if you look up Lakers Kings 2002 Game 6, it auto completes rigged or fixed for you. And obviously, in my alternate timeline, that doesn't even happen. The name Tim Donaghy does not ring out in the streets of the name of the common sports fan to prove the NBA's rigged. It always wants big markets to win because, well, the big markets don't always win in my timeline.
Mr. Johnson, do you have anything in there that you feel compelled to object to before we move into the judgment phase?
You know, to be honest, I actually really like the Tim Donaghy thing. That was something that I hadn't thought about. Really, I was just like a crazy time in the league, to be honest. I mean, the thing I do question is whether that Detroit team with Shaq would have won 2 and 3 more titles. I am not convinced that a team that would have been relying on a front court with Shaq and Rasheed Wallace would have been able to dispatch San Antonio.
The Rasheed Wallace trade, to be fair, I said the Rasheed Wallace trade didn't happen.
Because oh, you said that didn't happen?
No.
Oh, they wouldn't have sorry. Assets with
yeah.
Okay, never mind. Then.
But even so, they don't have a strong front court option besides O'Neal. I'll give you that much.
So, okay, well, I mean, I didn't realize that the Sheet trade wouldn't happen. I still don't think that they can beat the Spurs with Shaq. Shaq and I guess they would have had Billups and Hamilton. Would that they have still had that, or are you changing that as well?
No, they would have had Billups and Hamilton. I was going off a report from the esteemed Bay Area reporter Tim Kawakami, who was laying out all these possible trade scenarios in 2003 that Lakers were looking at. And I went with the Pistons one. I guess you went with... the Pacers won, but in his scenario, yeah, I mean, he said the not the Lakers, the Pistons were going to hold on to Billups and Hamilton in a deal for Shaq, partially because I don't know if their salaries were high enough that they could have really made the money match with those two. They probably had some sort of expiring contract. You know, Antonio McDyess is probably out there just waiting to get traded to make the money match. That was pretty much his whole NBA career.
Yeah, I know that. In mine, I don't have Shaq winning anything because the Pacers just weren't that great. We don't have to necessarily get into why I don't think that he would have won three more titles in Detroit. I will say that I don't think that it would have been as likely just because those Spurs teams in the mid-2000s are really, really good.
Yeah.
I'm not going to guarantee he wins three titles, but it's certainly a team that's good enough to be the dominant force in the East those years. I mean, they won 6-3 Eastern Conference. And they made it to six straight Eastern Conference Finals with ended his prime, but still in his prime Shaq. So I think it's definitely doable.
All right, let's move into the me talking part of the podcast, where we're gonna go. I'm just gonna go through the arguments really quick and then render a verdict tonight here in Basketball Court. First, I want to thank both of you as always for your well thought out and well researched briefs, Miles. Like I said, I thought you stretched a little bit with your Robert Horry comments, but the transcendent Kevin Garnett performance sort of, you know, I think that's a really good observation, is the way in which Minnesota somehow benefiting from the Kings and then that affecting like the Celtics and Cleveland and all that down the road. I thought that was a really interesting line of thought. I am also going to give you credit for... and, you know, I keep saying things like, I'm going to give you credit. It's not like I'm tallying these up. I'm just spitballing here. You get credit for talking about future mayor Kevin Johnson, who hopefully in your alternate timeline doesn't become the mayor at all, because that guy's kind of a creep. And
a huge sleazebag.
Yeah, I think it would be for the greater good were he not in office. Especially also because, like you said, you've saved Sacramento citizens millions of taxpayer dollars. And for that, Basketball Court thanks you. Basketball Court is a very populist court, just so we're clear. And so I think that's basically it. I think that the Kevin Garnett stuff is really good. On the Sam side, yeah, I think you're reaching a bit to suggest that people will start caring about the Sacramento Kings, because no one cares about the Sacramento Kings. I have driven past Sacramento twice since I've been out here. It is too far for anyone to willingly want to go there regularly from the Bay Area, especially when you have the Warriors right around the corner. That being said, you know, who knows? Maybe if they're really good. I also don't necessarily... I'm kind of a little bit more on Miles' side that I think it's unlikely the Pistons would have had enough talent to win the next three titles, the 04, 05, 06 titles. You have a tendency to want your teams to get three-peats.
I said they were good enough to win.
I'm saying I don't agree. I'm saying I don't agree. However, that being said, I think that the point about like small versus large market teams going forward is a really important one. because there was a stretch there where it seemed like it was the Lakers every single year, and then that kind of gets into a period where Boston wins a lot, and like the Celtics are interminable. Their fans are nauseating. So, which,
shout out to Stephen Tidings.
Yeah, I mean, those are both adjectives that could be described about the Lakers and their fans, respectively. So, and yeah, the rigging of games thing is very big. Jack Donaghy's cousin Tim not becoming a big deal, presumably saving him some prison time, which, you know, richly deserved, but probably a net good for looking at like the happiness quotient of society. He'd be slightly happier by not being in prison. Yeah, and I'm curious about like whether or not we would have seen the effects of this rigging down the road in the same way. So do either of you have any last things to say before I announce the winner tonight?
I'm ready to receive judgment.
I am ready to accept my judgment.
Perfect. Perfect. Well, as much as I think that it would be funny for one person to always win on basketball court, tonight there is no question in my mind that the winner is Sam Tidings.
Finally.
I thought you took it to the most interesting place in the end, which is the Donaghy thing. And yeah, that's basically it. That's what I liked. Because I appreciated going off the court a little bit for your conclusion. Start on the court, end off it.
Yeah, the Donaghy stuff was good. I think it really should be emphasized that this is the first one where Sam didn't have one team winning every title for like the next 6 years, though. It's maybe a strategy you should consider adopting. Thanks. In the future.
Thanks.
I will say, Miles, I thought your strategy of admitting that the Donaghy stuff was good in oral argument was an interesting one.
Yeah, I mean, in retrospect, maybe not the best idea, but when what's funny about Sam suggesting that I was stealing his content is I didn't even read his briefs before he sent, like, before he just recited them.
These are other good things that you want to tell the judge. It's like, yeah. I didn't read the other briefs. I'm unprepared.
I've already lost, so, like, this is...
You'll never get into law school at this rate.
Oh, man. Good times. Yeah, we've been talking about, you know, we're actually in law school right now. I'm writing our first brief, which is like a whole production. And one of the things you talk about is like, if there is an argument that, you know, the other side's going to make that you can't contest, like, don't bother contesting an incontestable argument. So I actually think Miles is kind of right on to say like, oh, you know, I didn't think of the Donaghy thing. But of course you've got to pivot from there to like, but what I said is better. However, this is just friendly banter between friends, so I don't think it's a big deal. So, Sam, you get a silver medal, a gold medal to add to your silver medal. How does that feel?
It feels splendid. I do just want to add that I kind of learned from the best, because Miles brought up the whole, if the Chris Paul trade doesn't happen, then we don't find out Donald Sterling's a racist thing. And so I learned that in this court, you sort of need to see the edges of the universe and where these things take you. So I want to thank Miles for winning me this episode.
Okay.
And I assume you'd also like to thank your hands for being so great. No, sorry, it's pretty much all.
I have large, beautiful hands.
Gifted hands, one might say.
Yes, gifted hands, you might even say.
Oh, good God. Well, we're not going to get into Ben Carson here in basketball court. That's too much.
This is probably off the rails here officially.
Yeah.
Save it for our November episode.
Yeah, special.
What if Ward beats Bush?
How does that affect the NBA? Man, that is a good question. Put that
in. Definitely do that. We're gonna put that.
Put that on the list of things to do. All right. This has been another episode of Basketball Court. In this episode, we talked about the Kings, not the Knicks, the Kings, and how them winning that series against the Lakers in 2002 would have changed the course of basketball history, and it did. It turns out it did here in Basketball Court. So I'd like to say one more time, follow us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, email us at basketballcourtpodcast@gmail.com. bballcourtpod is our Twitter handle. The name of this podcast is Basketball Court Podcast. Have I covered everything?
I think we're good. Yeah. Thank you, Tidal, for sponsoring episode 3.
Yes, thank you.
When you need great audio quality, as we always have here on the basketball court.
You got to go to Title. That's what I always say.
Many thanks to our co-counselor, Sam Tidings.
Thank you. Thank you, Judge, for letting me win this week. It really boosted my self-esteem.
And Miles Johnson.
Yep, thanks to both of you, especially you, Your Honor. Also, should we like put our individual Twitter things in here?
I don't know. How much are you trying to self-promote right now?
I think you should follow me on Twitter at Black and Outside. That's exactly what it sounds like.
Okay, Sam?
Then I guess if you're going to follow Miles, you should follow me on Twitter at Simmons Class.
Okay, and you can follow me on Twitter. I'm the only one whose name actually sounds like their Twitter handle. It's at PF Andrews on Twitter, where you can get a big dose of, mostly it's going to start being like tweets about the Philadelphia Union soccer team. So if that seems like your kind of thing,
oh, nice.
At PF Andrews is for you. Anyway, we've gone on long enough. Thank you so much for listening to tonight's episode. We'll be back in a couple weeks with another look at the great what-ifs of NBA history. For now, court's adjourned.